expecting like 5 to 10. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know, man. The tinsel economy these days.
The tinsel. But then I went to Browsins, right? And yeah. I got tinsel. 2 meters, $2. It's like, oh, I got fully ripped off for that first piece of tinsel. But it was like too late by the time I realised how expensive it was. You know, like you can't
You're
really
at the
go
counter like, and you don't really want to be like, oh, actually, I don't want this anymore.
You know, like,
yeah.
No, like, oh, I just bit the bullet and I bought it. But like, and to be fair, the cheapest chips tinsel is nicer. It's like plusher. It's got more tinsel. But like, even then.
It's fucking rip off.
Fucking rip off.
your accent is really popping off right now. You sound like me when I spent too much time around Manan. Okay. I'm already recording, so I got your nice tinsel run. That's fun. Are we ready?
Hi.
Hi, I'm Beth.
And I'm Jamie. Welcome to Driver Picks the Podcast.
Where I pick the podcast.
And I shut me cake off.
We are going to be discussing the 19th episode of Season 6 of Supernatural, titled Mummy Dearest. Jamie, what did you think?
Look, I was correct. It is, in fact, about the mother of everything. So
yes.
I think I get bonus points for that. I also get bonus points for the question, war crimes, question mark, because the answer is yes. The answer is yes. I was 100% correct when I said, I think what we really need to be concerned about is what Cass is doing to get power. I also think I get bonus points because I have actually literally said the quote, it's about the souls. It's not about the real estate. The real estate is like a fun side bonus. It's about the souls. I literally said that verbatim, word for word. And here we are.
And we're very proud of you. But the other thing that you've actually predicted that we haven't touched on is that you also said that you thought that Cass might be working with someone who we wouldn't necessarily consider him to be working with because it seems like maybe questionable. And then in this episode, obviously, we get the reveal that he very intentionally didn't kill Crowley.
I'm pretty sure also at some point I did say, like, I don't think Crowley's actually dead. I think he might have, like, either faked his death or
Which
is true, because he did. Like, he was working with Cass at the time and they worked together to fake his death. Like, I don't think that him not dying was, like, a Cass-only thing. Like, I don't think Cass managed to make it look like he died but actually secretly not kill him.
Yeah.
Like, I think Crowley knew that, because otherwise why the fuck would he do the whole, like, like, he essentially made his own special effects.
Yeah, with the fire and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
So, yes, we got the reveal this week that whatever Cass and Crowley are up to, they're clearly in on each other's plans.
Yeah.
And whatever we're doing in that particular plot, we're going to assume is something that Sam Dean Bobby wouldn't be totally on board with.
Here's the thing. I don't think Dean and Sam really want to kill Eve. They only want to kill Eve because she's doing bad things, but she's only doing bad things because Crowley is currently kidnapping and torturing her children.
Yeah, she's not actually the cause of the problem.
No.
Like, she is reacting to someone else antagonizing her.
Yeah. This is her going talk shit, get hit. Like,
yeah, exactly. Valid. I think that it is definitely
I think she's just the embodiment of the Taylor Swift song, I Did Something Bad.
Genuinely. I was actually thinking about the, like, if they drop my name, then I owe them nothing. Like, you know.
What's so funny, though, to me is mother of all, Eve, gets the line this episode, Castiel, you have no powers here. I'm older than you. I don't know what they're doing with the Bible. Because
I don't think they know what they're doing.
If Cass is an angel, theoretically he's older than Eve, who was theoretically the first woman, but God created angels before he created humans.
Yeah, I think that it is not necessarily
Eve. Bible fame.
Yeah, I feel like they just gave her the name Eve because it's symbolic. I don't think she's actually supposed to be Eve
because they already
of
fucked
Adam
up.
And Eve.
Because they already fucked up and already had a Lilith.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I don't think that she's supposed to actually be Eve. I think that it's supposed to just be, like, a symbolic name, kind of like Mary.
Oh my God, Eve is the ancestor of all humans, like the first woman, Eve of all monsters, like the mother of all.
Yeah, know, it's a twist.
Versus like Mary, the mother of Jesus.
Yeah.
So who do we reckon's Jesus, Sam or Dean?
I mean, I think it has to be Dean.
But Sam has the hair.
You're so right. But yeah, I mean, they've both been resurrected, so I guess it could go either way. But I feel like Dean's with the title Righteous Man.
Only one of them had to crawl out of their own grave, though. Which I feel like was a significant portion of the Easter. Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus core is not a thing I ever thought I'd say. But I feel like, Dean being associated with the concept of being like Michael's sword, like the sword of God, and also the righteous man, I feel like that puts him in more Jesus territory than Sam.
So what you're saying is Dean is actual Jesus, Sam is just demon Jesus.
I get the boy king. Yeah, I guess. Wow, what an assessment. Anyway, moving on. Yes, it is about the souls. Yes, we get Eve this episode. Actually, we have Eve's death this episode, which I honestly am kind of bummed that she was not more of a long-lasting character, because I actually, like, we know on this podcast we stan an evil woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Eve is no outlier. Like, I think that she's a really fun character. I think she has, like, a very, like, I think that her motivations are very clear, and I think that her motivations are both self-serving but also justified in, like, morality. And so I think that's a really interesting kind of,
like, she was happy, she was peaceful, she was chilling in purgatory. She wasn't causing any trouble beyond the fact that she'd already made monsters. Like, she was living her life.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they were like, what if we just, like, murder and torture your children?
Mm-hmm.
And understandably, she's fucking pissed about it.
Like you said, talk shit, get hit.
Mm.
And what I am really interested
in, I respect
in,
women's rights. I also really respect women's wrongs.
What I want to talk about, though, with Eve, because I think this is actually very fascinating, and I assume that it was maybe done intentionally. Like, I actually should mention, like, the writer and director this week, so we had written by Adam Glass and directed by John F. Showalter. Mm. These are people who we have seen time and time again. Like, they are familiar with the show, they're familiar with the themes, they're familiar with the characters. And I think that it shows this episode. I actually think that regardless of how you view the episode in its entirety, I think the characterization is pretty good this episode. I think we get a lot of really fun interactions and one-liners and quips, and I think that it's written well. I think that it feels like an episode of Supernatural. Like, there's nothing that stands out as particularly egregious in, like, oh, I feel like that wasn't, like, doesn't line up with previous, you know, versions of a character kind of thing. But one thing that I really wanted to talk about is the fact that the way that Eve is speaking to Dean in particular, for me, was really reminiscent of Zachariah.
Yeah.
Very much like, you will play the role that I'm assigning you. You think you have a choice?
Yeah.
Like, no, you're going to do what I say. Like, you don't have an option to here.
Also, the whole, like, fucking real rich of you say, oh, I'm not going to work with, like, a monster.
Yes. Lenore.
Hey, Lenore literally worked with the monster not even 10 minutes ago in terms of screen time.
Yeah.
And B, literally worked with Crowley to kill Lucifer. Like, almost the entire first half of the season, they were, in fact, working for Crowley. Like, it's a bit rich to be like, we'll work with the person who's currently kidnapping and torturing your children, even if they are literally peaceful monsters like Lenore.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, like, someone who's like, I just want to, like, kidnap and torture monsters. Not just kill them because they're hurting people, but, like, literally,
we want to study them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, we want to torture them for information.
We want to torture them for information and murder them so that we can gain more power.
We want to commit some war crimes. Yeah, exactly. And so I think that it is really interesting that we have her using this same kind of, like, she's presenting the argument in the same way as, like, Zachariah or Michael, or, like, by saying, like, you are insignificant to me. Dean says, the answer is no. And she goes, you say that like you've got another option. And I just wrote Angel Corps. Like, you know. And yeah, like Dean says, we don't work with demons. We don't work with monsters. And I was like, yeah, sure, babe. Keep telling yourself that. Because you're right. It's sort of a null point on both parts. Even Bobby says in this episode, you don't let Sam and Dean Winchester do anything. They're going to do what the fuck they want to do, regardless of what you want. That's just who they are. And it's right, because they have main character energy and they will just do what the fuck they want. But the other thing that was really, like, reminiscent for me of the angels was, number one, them embodying Mary to try and prove their point, which is also, like, very Zachariacal.
At least there was no mention of how she's a MILF this week.
Oh my god, right. At least there wasn't any sexualization of Mary.
You don't know you're missing until it's gone.
Actually, the part where, like, she, like, is, like, breathing on Dean's neck right before she bites him, I was like, oh, it's weird that that's your mom. Like, or not actually your mom, but, like, the visage of your mom, that's weird.
It's weird that she looks like your mom. Like,
yeah, that's a whole ass choice. The other thing that I had noted down was that, like, all of these eternal beings are fucking obsessed with the natural order.
Mm-hmm.
Like, death and reapers and the angels and Eve. All of them are fucking obsessed with this idea of, like, the plan and the natural order. And they hate the Winchesters and Cass coming in with their fucking ideas and being like, what if I revolutionize everything?
Some sort of eternal being coming to Dean and being like, are you the natural order? Because I'm fucking obsessed with you.
Honestly, I think part of why so many, like, huge eternal beings end up becoming obsessed with particularly Dean is because he just won't do what they want. And he's like, why won't you just fucking listen? And again, like Zachariah, like, he had this exact problem. Mm. One quick point I did also want to make about this kind of like scene at the end where Eve is presenting as Mary is I do love Sam Smith playing an evil character.
Mm.
She eats those roles up. I actually think like her peak is just evil woman. Like I just think that she just has a, like an air about her that I actually just I would prefer her to play a more morally corrupt evil role than I would see her portray a like very demure, like Mary from Home versus this portrayal of Mary. Yeah. Like for me, there is no question as to which performance I enjoy more. I just think that she has a natural talent for playing that kind of sadistic, I don't know. She just embodies it well.
I feel like this is the point of the podcast where I have to tell you, I did, in fact, watch with my sister this week. She was on the couch reading a book as I watched the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And her review is 1 out of 5 stars. The acting is really bad.
Oh, she's entitled to her
opinion. To be fair, though, she watched Supernatural before you did, so...
Well, she's also years older than either of us, so...
Just because she only watched 5 episodes and then gave up because it was too scary, that means she has taste.
I think it just means she doesn't like the genre, which is probably why she didn't like the acting, because it's like a genre style. But look, she's entitled to her opinions. I'll leave it at that. I think 1 is a bit rough. I guess I wasn't leaving it at that. I guess I'm a liar. Did you have anywhere that you wanted to go with discussion? Anything that you particularly wanted to note?
I don't know. I feel like I just need to crow in victory a bit more about how right I was about some things. Mm-hmm. Like, something's just very vindicating about the line. It's about the souls. I have said that before, like...
Very recently, even.
I've been saying it all along. It's not just about the real estate. It's about the souls. It's about the power they contain. I also love the fact that we get a really clear example this week of Men Are Stupid and Horny. She's very clearly bleeding. Looks like she's been fucking stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still like, I'll just make out with her a little bit.
Genuinely. Like, I have a note where it just says, Heaven must be missing an angel. And then, like, a million question marks. And then, did neither of you notice the giant red stab wound?
Like...
She's wearing a white dress. It's not like it's subtle.
No. Like, you can see this woman's been stabbed and you're still hitting on her? What, babe?
Priorities.
But also, I feel like we can say Eve is canonically bi. Because she does, in fact, infect the woman the same way or very similar, like, with the, like, the gentle chin
caressing
of the face by Eve. I'm just saying it now. Blanket statement. You can't convince me otherwise. She's that dead, so they can't disprove it.
That's Jamie's headcanon. Actually, that's honestly probably further evidence to your point. They immediately killed her. Oh, that's really not funny. That's really sad.
I love maybe, like, by headcanon makes it not only killing women off for man pain, but also bury your gaze.
Yeah.
They were like, how many tropes can we hit?
Supernatural's number 1 and 2 talents, honestly.
Which order do we think they're in? Do we think they're better off at burying their gaze or killing women for man pain?
I think they're better at burying their gaze because I think the course is sped run. You know, like Lily in All Hell Breaks Loose Part 1, what she had like 4 minutes or something between her introduction and her death. I did time it at the time. It's in the episode we talked about, but
go back for the reference if you need to. Personally, though, I think it's almost burying women for man pain though because they've had more practice.
It's been present
since the beginning. Like, they just do it more.
Yeah.
So they have to be better at it because they do it more. They've had more practice at killing off women for man pain.
Actually, maybe that is true.
Because they even kill off Lenore this week for man pain.
Okay, here's the thing. So maybe it is more common for them to kill women for man pain, right? But they're more efficient at burying gays.
True.
I think that there is a crossover where they have a skill if for both.
Okay, I think the chart goes on one, it's like...
You mean like an X and a Y axis?
Yeah, like an X and a Y axis, right? And one's like speed of death, right? And so if it's bury or gaze, it's likely to be speedier. So it's likely to be more on that side of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas it's more likely to happen because they just have more women rather than gay characters on the show.
Okay. So, but then it becomes how many times do they kill either the woman or the gay? Because like... Cass has already died multiple times in this show.
And we can't...
So is Dean, for that
matter. I was about to say, we can't count Mystery Spot Dean, because I feel like...
He's an outlier and shouldn't be counted.
Exactly.
But, like, the number of times they killed Dean, the number of times they've already killed Cass, like, but Mary also, or versions of Mary, even Karen, Bobby's wife, has already died twice, canonically. Like, and both times, man pain.
It's like speed versus how vicious.
Ellen and Joe have both been killed twice because after their original deaths, they were brought back for the Titanic episode only to be killed.
Killed again.
Like, you know, like, Mary has died so many times. We had actual Mary die, then we had ghost Mary die, and then we've had Zachariah's version of Mary, who doesn't really die, I guess, but sort of disappears. She's not really real. And then this version of Mary's, like, portrayal dies.
Eve is an outlier because she's both killed off really efficiently after coming out as bi. But also
a woman.
A woman, so she's killed really viciously.
Yeah.
Like, the emotional impact is maximized. You know what I mean? Like, so if you're a woman who's dying from man pain, it's going to be a vicious and bloody death.
It's so sad how true this is.
If you're getting killed off for burial gaze, they just want to do it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it's very rapid, usually off screen. Yeah. Or, like, very quickly they focus on something else. I know that this is very jokey-jokey. And, like, you know, obviously, we're a jokey-jokey podcast most of the time. But it is very depressing.
We're having a hard time with the Australians.
Yeah, but it's really depressing that you actually can map. Because, like, I'm thinking of deaths and stuff that you don't even know about yet. And you have no idea how accurate it is.
Look, I think a line graph is maybe not the way to map it. Maybe, like, a Venn diagram or something.
Yeah, do you know, like, we should make one.
If it's burial gaze, it's going to be efficient. If it's killing women for man pain, it's going to violent be and violent and bloody. And if it's both burial gaze and... Because, like, even in the season 2 finale, Lily is, if I remember correctly, is quite a vicious death. Like, she's hung by...
her neck.
Yeah. By demons for trying to escape. Like...
or potentially by, I suppose, by Ava.
Yeah.
Controlling the demons. Mm-hmm. So, like...
yeah.
Then that's women on women, like, as well, which is like,
yeah,
come on, guys.
But even Ava dies for man pain.
We should actually make the Venn diagram. I think that'll be interesting as we go through. Like, every single time we have a female character die, we can just plot whether we think it was because she was gay, because it was man pain, or somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are definitely deaths that we haven't had yet where I'm like, yeah, that fits in the Venn diagram. Like, I can see it already. Anyway, that's not what we came here to talk about today.
But just big yikes.
Yeah, blanket big yikes, I think.
Okay, well, are you ready for my PSA of the day?
I'm never ready for your PSA, but I will do my damnedest.
Yeah.
I think this is like a production thing. And honestly, it's just a point that I was going to make anyway. And it's something that I really like. I love when they have like a fun, jaunty song overlay like a really violent choreography thing.
I believe In Miracles was in fact a God-tier choice this week.
I fucking love it. I was like, you don't often hear the band Hot Chocolate in like media. Are you good? Is that a leverage thing?
Just something about the way you said hot chocolate just killed me.
Well, it's what it's called.
But also, yeah, chocolate is a leverage thing. It's like an inside joke.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is not a song that you would usually hear in this type of show. But I love when we get scenes like this, where it's like this really like fun, jaunty song. And then like, it's just like an actual massacre happening at the same time. Like, something about it just tickles me. It's giving me
Umbrella Academy, Istanbul, not Constantinople.
I never got into that show, but I remember seeing, like, clips. I think I know what you're referencing. So, for me, it's just very fun. I really loved that scene. And so, like, I guess my PSA is just, like, people in production should just do that more. Like, just have really violent choreography, but, like... the backing tracks are just like bops, you know?
Yep.
I love it.
My PSA this week is don't make a gay sex joke in front of your closeted brother. That is a microaggression.
I'm interested to know which scene you're talking about right now.
Cass, get out of my ass.
What? Wait, I am confused, genuinely. What is the gay joke that I assume was made by Sam?
Well, he says something about how Cass is always up his ass.
No, he doesn't. Dean says that.
But he's still bullying Dean for being gay. In that scene. So he's not saying it, but he's saying it really loudly with his implied.
So what it actually is Bobby says, I think it's time to make a call. And then they just look at Dean expectantly.
Exactly.
And Dean goes, why is it always me that's got to make the call? It's not like Cass lives in my ass. Then Cass appears directly behind him, to which he says, Cass, get out of my ass. And Cass iconically says, I was never in your... And then they just look at each other a bit and then move on.
It's not like a one-to-one perfect, but it was the inspiration for my PSA of the day.
Okay, so don't homophobically microaggress your clearly closeted sibling.
Yeah.
I mean, very specific, but it's valid. I feel like maybe just
It's less specific than some of my other PSAs.
No, I fucking love that scene. It's obviously, like, very well known.
Yeah.
in
fandom. It is one that I knew going in. I didn't realize it was here, obviously.
On this scene, and I'm not going to explain why. I'll be able to explain to you why very soon, but not today. This does play into my 612 phenomenon theory as well, this moment here. And for those of you who've been listening at home to my, like, whispering into the microphone when Jamie's out of the room, you hopefully will understand why I say that. I also think that we had another example of, like, something very similar, like a similar technique to the 612 phenomenon when Bobby is explaining the CDC call in the diner. In this instance, it's not in reference to the characters it usually is, I don't think, but I think it's in reference to Eve, given, you know, how the plot of the episode plays out. I'm just popping that here, and then I will be able to explain this to you very, very soon, I promise. Before the end of the season, I will be able to explain to you what exactly I'm talking about. But yes, that scene is particularly iconic, just the death yell of it all.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those, like, 4D chess things where it's just like, okay, well, you wrote it.
Here's the thing, if they had him finish the sentence, it's inherently less sus. But it's like he goes to say it and then he, like,
stops talking.
Yeah, like he just cuts himself off weirdly, like, because nobody else cuts him off in that scene.
They just stop talking and then they just look at each other.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That's the end of that interaction. They just move on.
I do want to move on. I want to say, I think Bobby deserves more than the boys are currently giving him.
Oh,
they give him a tablet and they're like, that's a computer. He's like, no, a computer has buttons. You are right, Bobby. That is a tablet. That is not a computer. And they should be more considerate of the fact that it is, in fact, a tablet. It's new technology. Like, using a tablet is inherently different to using a computer.
You can't just expect him to know how to use
it. And then, like, gaslight him and being like, oh, it's a computer. It's not.
Yeah.
A tablet is inherently different to a computer. Like, also, I have no doubt in my brain that Bobby can work out how to use a tablet. Like, he can do that. Bobby is a smart little cookie.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, to be like, no, that's computer. Like, no, mate, you're just gaslighting him there.
Like, it has, I think it has a CPU within it. Like, it has to work. But, like, you wouldn't look at an iPhone and say, yeah, that's a computer. It's kind of like, you know how you have the concept of schemas? Like, in psychology. So, like, if, for anyone who doesn't know, basically, like, within your brain, it essentially, as you're aging and as you, like, interact with more and more objects and things and have, like, a concept of what they are and what they do and how they're used, your brain creates sort of, like, a flow chart to figure out what an object is. And, like, if you look at a computer, as Bobby would understand it, even a laptop, and then you look at a tablet or a phone, that's not a one-to-one transferable thing. That's, like, you've got to go through a couple of steps. It's not as easy as, like, oh, sofa to bench.
My favorite example of that is, like, it's how you recognize that something's a dog, even if it's a different breed of dog that you haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
It's like how you can ID the difference between a dog and a cat.
Yes.
It's like you can see the difference and you learn how to ID the difference. And if you're used to something that has like a keyboard and a mouse, to go from that to a tablet is like, it is quite a jump. Yeah.
Anyway, that's kind of a little sidebar.
Yeah. So they're mean to Bobby this week and I don't appreciate that bullshit.
No, they're also kind of mean to Cass this week. I don't know if you noticed. Well,
and that's why he's committing war crimes. If they were nicer to Cass, then they'd commit fewer war crimes.
Do you remember, I think last week, we were talking about the angel who was saying to Sam and Dean, like, I think you call him when you need him, you know? And I was talking about how that actually becomes, like, for Cass, like, an ongoing theme of, like, he feels like his utility is synonymous with Sam and Dean actually wanting him around. If he can do something, then, and he is, like, valuable in that sense, then he feels like they want him around. If he no longer serves a function, then they lose interest in him as a being, right? Which is fundamentally untrue, but you can obviously see why he would think that way, right? And it's really emphasized in this episode when he can't, like, leave to search the town, which honestly, the way that Dean is like, what, is mum making you limp? And then Cass goes, figuratively, yes. And it's like, okay, so not literally then. So literally you're what, hard as a fucking rock right now? Like, okay.
I mean, Dean's there, yeah.
I feel like maybe you could have just, like, phrased that differently because the implication is that he's literally hard. Anywho, Dean says to him, oh, that's great because without your powers, you're basically just a baby in a trench coat.
And, like, he's not wrong, but also that's mean.
I feel like maybe it is wrong. I feel like Cass has more to bring to the table than just his angelic abilities. Like, I feel like he's also invaluable.
And this is why he's committing war crimes.
Exactly. He's invaluable as a, like, a tactician and as a strategist, but also as a friend, obviously. And, like, it's so funny that this happens because also, like, later in the episode, like, you see Dean being so willing to defend Cass and be like, no, like, there is no way that he is going to be intentionally wronging us. But Cass isn't there to see that. He only sees Dean antagonize him. And the thing is, like, for Dean, he does that to everybody. He does that to Bobby. That's how he talks to Sam. Like, it is how he is with people he cares about. But the people he cares about normally also know that he cares about them. I feel like maybe Cass doesn't get to see that side. Like, Cass isn't around when Dean is sticking his neck out for him. He's only around to be antagonized.
And to commit war crimes.
And to commit war crimes. But I feel like it's important to note that that is, like, an ongoing thing. Like, even Bobby at the end of this episode says, wow, we should take you on more monster hunts, which, like, it sort of plays into the same thing again of, you only want me around because of the functions that I can perform for you. And, like, that is particularly difficult, I think, for Cass specifically, in the same way that it is for Dean, and that whole, like, daddy's blunt instrument versus I'm not the hammer you think I am. That whole concept of the way that they are used by their families as a means to an end without being respected for, like, their own views and wants and desires. So the fact that this is now being reinforced by the people who are supposed to be his friends and are supposed to care about him and are not supposed to be wanting him to just be a tool to serve a cause, like, that is going to have ongoing impact on his character.
Is this your really long-winded way of telling me this is going to be relevant later on?
This shit is going to be relevant in, like, the end of the series. Like, it is just, it's like Sam and autonomy or Dean and food. It's just one of those things that is just ongoing and it's a self-worth issue.
Wait, these characters have self-worth?
No, that's my point. But anyway, what I was working up to there is that the moment where Dean says that, says, like, oh, you know, without your powers, you're just a baby in a trench coat. When Cass just kind of looks at him and then turns to look out the window, that's actually Misha fully forgetting his next line. And the part where Sam then says, I think you hurt his feelings, is fully improvised. Like, Jim Beaver just, like, picked it up with the next part of the dialogue and they just, like, kept it in. But yeah, like, there is supposed to be another line there. There is supposed to be, like, Cass's response. And instead Misha just went, I'm just going to give him the silent treatment. Like, that's the time where Cass would normally just poof and disappear.
Yeah.
But he couldn't. So he just pensively looked out the window instead. He's like,
practically, I can't leave because unfortunately this is essential for me to be able to continue with my war crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to ghost them a little bit while I'm still physically standing here.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I just did a lot of rambling. Did you want to take us somewhere else?
Oh, I do want to say that, like, I fully picked the fact that the kids were actually, like, infected. Well, I was like,
one of them anyway.
Yeah. I don't understand why they were like, oh, you know, this thing that's going to result in basically the end of the world if we don't fucking stop it. Let's just take a break from dealing with that to go and get these kids to, like, temporary safety. It's like, doesn't matter if you save the kids now. They're still going to be fucking dead if you don't actually deal with this problem. Like,
that's very cascoded of, like, you.
I know it's cascoded of me, but, like, Cass is correct in this point. It's like, you can absolutely save these kids. I'm not saying you shouldn't save these kids. I'm just saying, maybe think about your priorities for a second there, buddy. Like, maybe think about the fact that, okay, you can, you know, nope out of this situation for 5 minutes to go and take these kids somewhere safer. But, like, also, if this thing spreads, nowhere's going to be safe. You might as well deal with this thing and then relocate the kids.
Cass saying, pardon me for highlighting their crippling and dangerous empathetic response with sarcasm, essentially, is your point.
My point is, he may be committing war crimes, but he's got a point.
Do you know what's really funny? Is, like, I fully understand where you're coming from. Like, from a tactical perspective, yes, obviously, that is the clear decision, is to be like, okay, we'll deal with this later, but right now we have other stuff to prioritize. However, I fully understand why they wanted to help the kids first, because it is a sense of they just wanted to do something that felt like they were actually achieving something, you know, not just like, oh, we're gonna keep chipping away at this ongoing issue that we're having with Eve, with these monsters, with Crowley, with whoever. Like, this is something that we can just do right now. It'll take us maybe 45 minutes and we have achieved something and we have helped someone. And isn't that the whole point? Like, this for them is supposed to be like just a nice, easy win. Like, amongst all the shit, at least we can just get these kids somewhere safe and we just know that we've done that much.
Instead, they just fully got played. Makes they should have seen more coming.
Well, I mean, to their credit, you know, Dean says there's a couple dozen tests. They clearly ran every test they knew of. But I can understand Cass's point Which is like, okay, but like, bigger fish to fry. These kids will be fine for another hour while we deal with this other thing. It's a matter of your priorities. It's a matter of your drive. Like, Cassie at the moment is in very much war mode. He's in tactician mode. He's not in empathy mode. It almost falls into Dean's whole thing of the ends don't necessarily justify the means.
It's the sort of thing to me, though. It's like, the kids are already traumatized.
Yeah, but you could have them being less or more traumatized.
Like, I just don't think sitting an extra hour and, like, just put him in a separate office or something. Take him out of the cell. Put him somewhere safe. That doesn't require you to detour 50 minutes out of your way. You know, like, time is of the essence.
This is the thing. Like, they both have a point. Both Dean and Cass have a point here. And actually, this is really interesting because they're having, like, a domestic. Like, Sam and Bobby are not weighing in on this discussion. And, like, when they say, hey, like, we're going to take these kids somewhere safe, Cass doesn't try and appeal to Sam. He wants to talk to Dean about it. Not in, like, even... It could be read as a Destiel thing, but that's not how I'm intending to put this argument across. I think that it is very interesting for their dynamic to have this point of tension. For the first time since probably season 4, you really get a sense that Cass's priorities and Dean's priorities do not align, because they did for a long time and they were working very closely together. They are very much allied. And at this point, you're kind of like, oh, there is a tension here. Where their viewpoints...
And it's not just the normal tension of they want to fuck.
Yeah, it's like their viewpoints, their priorities are not lining up right now. And you don't have that tension built between Cass and Sam or Bobby and Cass either. It is specifically Dean. And I think that that is, one, because of Destiel of it all, but two, because the audience has been conditioned into Dean's POV this whole season. And so, because they're obviously trying to build this tension with Cass, as like he's sort of having his little villain arc, you know, it makes more sense for the audience to be like, well, our perspective has been aligned with Dean so far, and we want the audience to think that Cass is doing something wrong, therefore we will have Dean disagree with him. But, like, the way that Cass says Dean's name as well in this scene, and he doesn't just say it once, he says it twice, and he says it like the poorest little meow meow possible. He's like, Dean, Dean. It's not gruff like it would normally be. It's, like, so soft, and it's so different to how he would normally address him. I think it's a really interesting choice that Misha made to, like, play it like that. Like, obviously they're trying to keep it low so that the kids don't hear. But I think also, like, there is a softness in there that is, like, coercive in a way. He knows that if he can convince one of them, it is more likely to be Dean. And actually, it's as Cass watches them go and Dean, like, turns back at the door and looks at him all dramatically, we have a little clip of Dean's theme play there too.
It's hard because you're like, da-da-da, and I'm like, yeah, but also, like, it's just a bad decision on Dean and Sam's part. Like, I understand that they're trying to minimize the trauma these kids have, but also they don't really have time for that. Like, minimizing these children's trauma is not more important than saving the world. I'd prefer to actually save the kids than minimize the trauma.
You can't have your cake and eat it too in this scenario. Whatever choice you make is going to be morally or tactically clouded.
Everything about the way they deal with the children to me says they're not thinking this through.
I don't think they're supposed to seem like they're thinking it through, because they are acting on their instincts. They are acting on the heart choice. It is supposed to be layered and nuanced. It is supposed to be a difficult choice. That's why it's interesting. If it was a really clear-cut choice, it wouldn't be compelling. It wouldn't have any kind of stake to it. And that's why the characters are at odds, because they have different priorities. They're looking at it from either the close-up of, like, the trees or the broad view of the forest, and there is just no medium that they're meeting it. We've talked a lot about how, like, we're getting Dean's perspective pushed on us a lot as the audience this season. We don't really get Cass's POV. We've had it been alluded to now in the last couple episodes specifically, but we don't actually know what Cass's headspace is, what his mindset or his framework is. We only have Dean. And Dean is the equivalent of looking at the trees, because he doesn't have a way to have the broader view. He doesn't know what's been going on behind the scenes. Because neither does the audience. And that's kind of the point. And so I think that this particular, like, point of tension between the characters is really fascinating for that reason. Because, like me and you, they're coming at it from entirely different perspectives. They're trying to meet in the middle, but it's just kind of not going to work because they have different subjective viewpoints and they have different information. Because I also have way more information than you do about, like, the plot and the characters as a whole and, like, why I think that narratively these choices make sense for the characters and things. You don't have that. And I don't necessarily think that if you had the same you know, information that I do, you would change your viewpoint, but it does contribute.
I find what's so funny, though, is the way this ties into the Sarah Gamble long con.
Oh, please elaborate.
Because, essentially, she doesn't like Cass, right?
We've been through this. Yeah.
She doesn't like Cass. So she's like, how can I get rid of Cass? I'm going to have him commit war crimes and not like children. Whereas, like, the argument is not about whether he likes children or not, you know what I mean? But it's just
although
like,
that's also recurring. You know, like, attempted child murder by Cass is also not unheard of.
But, you know, it's really interesting that she's sort of trying to frame him as almost a villain. Like, he's working with Crowley, despite the fact he knows what Crowley is doing. Like, almost that's why he's working with Crowley, because he knows what Crowley is doing and he wants to get in on that action. But it's just really interesting that she's framing Cass as kind of inherently unlikable, as inherently inhuman, which of course he is inhuman, but it's also really interesting from a framework of how does media frame autistic coded characters?
Yeah. I was wondering if we would kind of circle back around to this as well.
Because, you know, within media, autistic characters and autistic coded characters are not uncommonly framed as callous almost because they don't understand social cues. But because we've, as a species, have put so much stock on social norms, as soon as you put an autistic or an autistic coded character in media, they're framed as less human, as less deserving of love and respect and care because they're, you know, callous. And it's like that is not the case at all. And I find it really interesting how the Sarah Gamble long con ties into the villainization of Cass, the villainization of his most autistic coded trait, and the way that popular media decides to code for people who are neurodivergent at large.
Yeah, like, it's like, oh, this character is being coded as unempathetic.
And because they're unempathetic, they're a villain.
Again, this all comes down to a lot of perspective. And there's actually a very interesting discussion to be had about the way that Cass is framed in this season.
But I just think it's the framing that's interesting.
It's really interesting that you say that, though, for me, because, like, I don't interpret the framing of Cass as inherently evil or, like, villainous or immoral for not wanting to remove the kids. Like I said, like, Eve was, like, angel core this episode. I think it really sort of draws back to, like, the concepts in season 4 and 5 where the angels kept telling Dean, I don't care about how much you care about your singular brother. Is your brother more important than the rest of the fucking planet? There are priorities here that you are too small and insignificant to understand. And I feel like that's kind of the same thing. Like, Cass is looking big picture and Dean is looking at the details. Personally, like, I think that Cass gets framed as a villain this episode, but I don't particularly see it in that decision. Like, this whole season, he has been trying to impress upon Sam and Dean how he does not have time for their petty shit because he is busy, like, running a war. And so I think that in this moment, he is desperately trying to implore with them, can we just prioritize the big thing right now? The thing that I'm focused on, because we are always prioritizing your thing. And for Sam and Dean, who do not have Cass's perspective because he is not actually sharing much with them for, like, now we know obvious reasons, which is that he knows that they wouldn't approve
of his war crimes.
Of his war crimes. And again, it's forest and the trees. Cass is looking at the big picture of, I have to do this thing with Crowley if I want to win this thing.
If I want to avoid the apocalypse just starting back up again, you know, that thing that we all sacrifice shit for.
Exactly, exactly. Whereas Sam and Dean are looking at the, okay, but you're working with Crowley, you know. And it's like, yeah, but that's like a detail in the broader picture. And they're like, yeah, but the details matter.
But also, double standards much, bro. Like, come on.
Yeah. Like, so there are layers here. So to me, like, I actually don't feel like Cass is specifically put in the role of, like, oh, a villain reveal until the end of the episode where you find out that he is very much aware that Crowley's alive. And you're like, oh.
Very much actively working with Crowley.
And no, very much lying to Sam and Dean.
I personally saw that as, like, it was like the thing that they were using to start framing him. So when the reveal comes at the end of the episode, you're like, oh, well, of course he's the villain. He was willing to sacrifice children for the greater good.
Yeah, so no, I see it more as like an interpretation of, like, he has come to recognize that he actually cannot afford to care about little things like Sam and Dean in the broader scope. Him looking at them being like, oh, we have to save these two children is like, okay, but we don't have time because I know that I don't have time to be babysitting you guys all the time. Every time I have to take time off of my mission to babysit you guys, it fucks me over. We actually get a quote, I think, from Sam later in the series where he says, Dean, this is how they fuck us every time. Well, he doesn't say fuck because they can't, but, you know, this is how...
Because it is the CW Supernatural.
Yeah, and Ghostface's effect, I'll say they say fuck. Sam says, like, you know, Dean, every single time we make the heart choice, and that's how they fuck us over. It's a whole big complicated thing, but it all really comes down to perspective, and it's really difficult. It is really, really difficult to discuss it with you because you really need the next three episodes to fully appreciate how different their perspectives are and what they're all prioritizing in this overarching plot.
I do think there's one thing that we can in fact agree on, though.
Mm-hmm.
If Bobby says something is wrong, then it's wrong. Bobby is always correct.
Bobby is the moral compass.
Bobby is the moral compass of this show. If you disagree with Bobby, then you need to be really concerned.
I'm trying to think of there's a time where I would disagree with you, and I can't think of anything, but, like, maybe pending on that one.
Bobby might do some shit later on, but at this point of the season, Bobby is the most reliable moral compass I can think of.
One thing that I do want to talk about in terms of, like, Cass being...
Is there a ship name for Cass and Crowley? Sorry, this is the most side tangent. I'm just like, they're working together now. Do we have, like, a ship name for them?
We do. It's Crastiel, which is not, I think...
We need to rename them. I'm sorry.
I don't love it.
Like...
We get one later in, I think, from... Oh, I think. I know. We get a ship name out of season 8 that's Destiny, and I think it's the best ship name. It's so good. It's so good. Like, I don't ship it personally, but just the name is so good. Like, and it's so symbolic, you know?
We could change it to Cassidy, but then I figured that's a bit too close to Cassie.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, Crowley's legal name is Fergus. Can we do something with that? Ferg Cass?
Cassus?
Wait, can we do something with the word Fergalicious? I feel...
Cassalicious?
You know how, like, the ship name for, like, Ed and Steed from Our Flag Means Death is, like, Black Bonnet? Like, it's, like, a not necessarily just, like, first name only. Danger. And G-Man.
I feel like there's too many, like, angel demon ships in Supernatural to be like, oh, we can just be like, oh, like the angel and the demon. Like,
yeah.
Because by that account, then Megastiel. It would also, yeah, like it would also cover Megan Cass.
Wow, they're really just making Cass hook up with demons. Is that just shorthand for this character is doing morally questionable things? Because they did that to Sam all of season 4.
I feel like the only thing that could be funnier than just having Cass hook up with demons is if later down the track they do in fact make Dean a demon.
No, I just had the funniest fucking thought. Literally, a character hooking up with a demon is absolutely shorthand for this character is doing morally questionable things in other areas of their life. And people who have seen this show, season 10. That's all I'm going to say. Season 10.
But no, like, if they're now like, oh, Cass's thing is he hooks up with demons, make Dean a demon, and then it's fine.
Good omens core.
Then you can have all the queer content you want because he's a demon, so it doesn't count.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's how that works. Anyway, the point I was going to make before we got sidetracked is that talking about Cassa being framed as a villain, we get a lot of him sort of shrouded in darkness this episode, and this episode is fucking dark. I don't know what happened. It's like they just decided to turn all the lights off for this episode. But it is...
They used all their budget in that one scene where the diner lights up.
Oh, yeah, where Cass is like, close your eyes. Yeah, you're right. That is the entire lighting budget for the rest of the season gone. Even when, like, they have Lenore, like, Sam and Dean are, like, relatively well lit considering they're in Bobby's fucking basement. But Cass is, like, barely lit. Like, there's a little bit of backlighting on the back of his head, but, like, his entire face is in shadow. Mm-hmm. And then when he is, like, looking out the window waiting for Sam and Dean to come back from delivering the kids to their uncle and Bobby comes up and starts talking to him, he fully has the, like, bar imagery. Like, it is not subtle. It's all over his face. Like,
because he's going to jail for war crimes.
I think it's just sort of, like, emphasizing the fact that, like, there is a darkness happening. That's just how it's kind of being laid out.
They're framing him as working with a demon, which is a morally questionable thing.
Yeah, generally speaking.
That's their shorthand now. You know, like, they've well established this. Like, you're working with your demon, you're probably doing some messed up shit, like drinking demon blood.
And also, you have to be under the assumption that he's been working with Crowley for a while.
Because he framed his, like, he faked the death for him.
And Crowley's been quote-unquote dead for a significant chunk of this season. So it's not like, oh, this is a recent development. This is something that's been in the works for a little while now.
What got me is they open up the cell that the kids have kept in, right? And they just immediately go to uncover their mouths. I'm like, what if they've got fangs and they fucking bite you, mate? I understand they're children. They can also be monsters. You did, in fact, have to babysit a monster for a bit like 14 episodes ago. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That was a plot point. Babies can be monsters too.
Yeah, no, that's valid. That's valid. I do think that one of the things that, like, in talking about them just being kind of like shitty hunters this episode, one of the things that did frustrate me is, like, right at the top of the episode when Dean gets the phoenix ash on himself and then he's like, this shit doesn't do anything. And then I'm like, thank fuck Sam made the point of, like, yeah, neither does silver. Neither does iron, because you're not a fucking monster. You're just a regular-ass human. And I was like, yeah, Sam, exactly. Obviously. Like, and I understand why they had to do it, like, to sort of introduce the concept that Dean could then drink the ash so that he could bait her into biting him kind of thing. Like, I get that they were setting up that it's not dangerous. But also, number one, I feel like Dean should have been able to make the connection himself. I don't think that we needed to have Sam and Bobby be like, well, maybe it's like this other thing. But two, the fact that he drank it, like, he's literally drinking cremated remains. Like, I feel like they really glossed over that. Like, that's not just, like, oh, ash from the fireplace. That's not just twigs. That's
ash from a bloody being that we were told to sympathize with because he was just murdering
rapists. That's like taking a teaspoon of grandma. Like, yeah. That's weird.
Also, do they, like, those remains are so fucking old.
Jesus.
What are you doing, buddy? Good like, Lord. I understand that you don't have, like, a high tolerance for the respect that remains deserve. You do, in fact, light multiple corpses on fire.
On the red.
And you have, in fact, carried bones around in a box.
Mm.
But, like, drinking them just seems next level, buddy.
I don't know. It seemed like a choice.
You know, Supernatural is notorious for making those.
Mm. One other thing I wanted to talk about is actually some beer meta in this episode. I don't know if you
beer
noticed.
Meta? Beer in meta? In my podcast?
It's more likely than you'd think. In the scene where they've just discovered the bar full of monsters and Dean has coined them Jefferson Starships, which I think is really fun purely because they then use a song by Jefferson Starship at the end of the episode, and I just think that that is really fun. I also love that Sam humors him and decides to just go along with calling them Jefferson Starships. I think that's very entertaining. But behind Dean, once Sam, Cass and Bobby have been removed by the authorities, there is a sign for Schultz Beer. And when I went back to reference the beer meta, I went back to the post I've used before, which is by Mittens Morgul, and they have said Schultz is almost entirely associated with death or debts, as in favors owed or the like. There are different colored labels for it too, one even involving traditional like heaven duty coded yellow and blue, which is what we had this particular episode. If a character is framed with Schultz, it's usually a warning. I think it's interesting to have it in this episode because I think it's very clear, like obviously like we did have the blue and yellow heaven coded version of the sign, and it is framed behind Dean. Dean is, at the end of the episode, the only character who is not willing to presume that Cass could have any sort of ulterior motives. He's the only person out of the three
ulterior
of them.
Motives in my gay lover?
It's more likely than you'd think.
I'm sorry. The thought popped to my head fully formed.
Never apologize for that. Dean is trying to defend Cass even to Cass's face. Like, when Cass is saying, I don't understand how Crowley could have survived, like I burned his bones. And Dean says, well, you know, he's a crafty son of a bitch. And Cass is like, yeah, well, I'm an angel. And it's like that petty little, like, I should be better than that kind of thing. And then he disappears. And then obviously Sam and Bobby raise their like concerns that actually maybe, you know, Cass has a point. He is an angel. He should have known that those were the wrong remains. Like he should have known if Crowley was still kicking. And really it's only Dean who allows any innocent till proven guilty sort of framework. Mm. And so I think that that's interesting, having had Dean be the one framed by the Schultz sign. And obviously, like, it's sort of, like, framed as a warning. And, like, the duties of heaven obviously, like, play into that there as well.
I didn't notice the beer meta.
That's okay. That's why I'm here.
I don't know if I've got too much more to say about this one, Beth.
There was one thing that I did want to point out to you. So I actually didn't know if you would be able to sort of guess to a further extent what this episode was going to be about, because the name, like the title of the episode, Mommy Dearest, is actually a reference to a book and a film. And in it, it is about this mother who basically is very manipulative and cruel. And I was like, I think that's really interesting considering the motives they give Eve, which is like the inverse of that.
Though Eve seems like she's a great mom. It's actually kind of really interesting because they give her very similar motivations to what they give John, except not at all, because she actually is doing it for her children. You know what I mean? Like, the sheer difference between basically going on this sort of revenge mission, but because harm is still actively happening versus avenging harm that had happened in the past, that's not necessarily going to happen again, even if you don't go on the revenge mission. I don't know if that, like, that frame, like, if it makes sense, that sentence, but, like, that was a lot of words.
Look, we'll find out when I do the edit.
Like, but you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting that on paper, a very similar mission to kind of what John had, except for the framing of it is very much like, it's not she's doing it to avenge someone who's already dead. She's doing it because it is still actively happening, which is why she wants to hunt down Crowley, not because he had previously tortured her children, but because he is still actively doing it.
Yeah, she's trying to prevent it from happening more.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Eve and her children, mm-hmm. I also wanted to very quickly touch on Lenore. I think it's really interesting that she is appealing to Sam in the moment when she's asking for them to kill her. I think that it is a very interesting choice purely based in the, like, Sam, I'm a freak Winchester discussion and his whole sort of focus on, like, you know, Dean, you might have to kill me, like, you don't know that I'm not going to turn bad. You don't know that I'm not going to pose a risk to people. Like,
and the correct answer is, Sam, if you stop drinking demon blood, then you might not turn evil.
I think it was really interesting that she specifically was appealing to Sam, because I think that, like, I'm pretty sure when they met Lenore, that was like season 2, I want
to
say.
It was a wild flashback. It's to
been
have
a while.
What is with the supernatural writers and bringing back random vampire characters?
Oh, you know, that's a really good question, Jamie. I wish I could answer it for you because I truly don't know. They have a fascination with it. Remember how vampires are supposed to be basically extinct? I think that they really made an interesting choice having her appeal to Sam because, yeah, the last time she saw the brothers, like, we were smack bam in the middle of that plot. And it's truly very fascinating. I also think there's something to be said for the fact that Sam and Dean are trying to, like, talk her down, and Cass just kind of goes, I needed to hurry this along, so, you know, I'm just going to take her out. Anywho, I don't know if I have anything else that I specifically want to talk about in this episode. There are a couple other notes, but honestly, like, we've already been talking about this for an hour and a half. So I'm happy to wrap up. Did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to add in?
Oh, I do want to just say one thing. He's right. Feds aren't allowed to do that. ACAB. My favorite note of the episode is, though, what for? War crimes? Eyeball emoji.
I quite liked the quote from Dean, where he says, is there anyone in this diner that isn't a flesh-eating monster? And Sam just goes, yeah, me and you. Oh, also the close-ups as Eve is dying are fucking horrendous. And I'm so sorry, John F. Showalter, but that was a poor decision, my dude. They were not effective, in my subjective opinion. I think that they could have been done much better.
I agree with that.
Also, when Cass heals Dean, he doesn't even say thanks, which is just fucking rude.
Like, come on, have some more compassion for your war crime boyfriend.
He's having a rough time.
So hard committing all those war crimes.
Yeah, you know, it puts a strain on you.
And your relationship, because then you have to hide all the war crimes.
Right, Cass is tense right now. That's what he meant when he said that he was only figuratively limp. He's rock hard, but only in his shoulder blades, yeah. You know? Like, shoulders and neck, that's where you hold your tension.
Yeah, Dean should be more considerate, give him a massage.
Anyway, I think that just about does it for today's episode. Jamie, how would you rate Mummy Dearest out of 5?
I think I'm going to give it, I don't know, like, for all of my complaints about the way they framed Cass this episode, they have actually put thought into where they're going with the season, which is a refreshing change of pace from Kripke era, where things just seem to happen. Like, and I'm sure they put thought into it, but personally, for me, watching Kripke era felt very much like Kripke knew what he wanted to do, but not how he wanted to do it. Sarah Gamble very much seems like a detail sort of girly. She knew that she didn't want Cass in her show anymore, and she was like, I'm going to make him a villain. Then they can justifiably kill him, and we never have to see him again. I don't think that's going to work for her, but, you know, you've got to respect her plan.
Yeah.
But I definitely think it's a bit hard to rate this episode because for all of the things that I enjoyed about it and, like they've given us enough clues, obviously, for me to be able to guess that purgatory was not about the real estate, it's about the souls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the real estate's just bonus. I definitely think some of the like, reveals this episode were very satisfying to an audience member. And, like, I think that the reveal that Cass and Crowley are working together makes a lot of sense logically and also is a really good reveal. And I think the acting's really good. However, the, like, upwards underneath angle so that you could mainly see chin was an interesting decision.
I also thought that as I was watching it, what a choice. I mean, I understand why from, like, a film perspective. Like, because they wanted to make him seem, like, large and imposing and like,
more
a threat.
Powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense, but
it's also just not that flattering of an angle, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's for anyone. No, this is not a slight against Major at all. It's just, like,
I would have much preferred them to have, like, black wing imagery behind him or something. You know what I mean? Or, like,
yeah.
Maybe, like, fire imagery around Crowley. Like, some sort of crown in it, imagery on Corelli would have been cool. Like, you know, do that metaphorical, like, these are two beings that are infinitively big being crammed into these human bodies.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Rather than just, oh, we're going to shoot them at an upwards angle so that you can sense that they have more power than maybe is obvious.
I feel like even if we had just, like, a close-up shot, just his, like, eyes or something, and they just had them, like, had the angel glow or something, like...
Yeah.
Something to imply power that wasn't that, like, sort of odd upwards shot.
Yeah, it's just a lot of chin.
Well, something about it I feel like was just maybe not angled correctly.
Yeah.
They've done shots like this before and they've looked impeccable.
Yeah.
Like, I think recently we've just released...
Maybe we just don't like this director.
No, I feel like we've liked his episodes before. Like, we've talked about him prior and I don't think we've ever had a particular issue. In one of our bonus episodes, Beth from Raising Petition and Raising Winchesters was chatting about how she loved the scene from On the Head of a Pin where you get the upward shot of Cass and there's, like, the street lamp and you get Misha's jawline. Like, yeah. It's very sharp and, like, angular or whatever. This could have been a very similar shot, but it was just something about the angle or the lighting just wasn't quite it.
There are so many more interesting and more visually appealing ways that they could have done
implied
it.
Instead, this. And I feel like the shot lingered too long, too.
Yeah.
It was, like, it was just a beat too much and I was like, okay, now it just kind of looks like he's, like, trying to be intimidating, but it's not actually coming across.
It feels like the Instagram models who only ever take their shots from, like, down below. You know what I mean? Like,
But anyway, your rating.
I think I'm going to just have to give it, like, a 3 stars out of 5. Like,
I think that's respectable.
I think the script is actually really quite strong.
Mm-hmm.
It has some really nice, memorable moments. It has some really good reveals. I really enjoy, like, the characterization of Eve. I really like...
We get the line, I have a burning sensation, which is just...
is great. You know, like, I feel like this episode, but just something about the framing of Cass this week didn't quite sit right with me and, like, that sort of stuff. Also, I just think it's really interesting that they were like, oh, we've got to torture this character for information, but we're not going to get Dean to do it, despite the fact Dean is very good at torturing people for information. And I understand he probably doesn't want to, but again, it comes down to that whole, like, what are you willing to do to save the world sort of thing. And I think it could have been very impactful if they look at what he's actually willing to do to save the world.
Honestly, like, I agree with you. I think season 6 is really well paced and I think it's really actually well set up for this reveal. Because if you think back to the beginning of the series, the beginning of the season, I think it's the first episode we have Balthazar introduced. It's the first episode with Cass in the season. And he, like, fully just, like, puts his hand inside that little kid. And Dean is, like, trying to be like, hey, is this appropriate? And Sam is like, I'm sure it's fine with his, you know, lack of soul. It's Cass ultimately who's willing to do that. And then again, he does it to Bobby, you know, recently. And so it's like, what is he willing to risk to, you know, achieve his ends? The next episode is titled The Man Who Would Be King. Do you have any thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams, fears, or predictions?
Okay, so first up, I think it's going to be like a Cass Crowley episode. Like, I think they're both going to be there, so you don't even have to ask me that one.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Crowley is officially not dead, you can now once more ask me if you think he's going to be there next week.
Uh-huh.
He's definitely going to be there. There is no way in hell they're not dealing with any of these implications. Like, for any of my issues that I have with Sarah Gamble as a showrunner, lack of knowledge about pacing and plot reveals is not one of them. I honestly have a lot of respect for Sarah Gamble as a showrunner and the way she has paced out her reveals. Like, I think whether you like the plot line of season 6 or not, the structure of the season as a whole is actually still quite good. I think they're definitely going to have to deal with the implications of this week. I definitely think that we're going to get the reveal, like, for the boys that Cass and Crowley are working together, and I think Cass is going to try and justify it, and then Dean's going to push him away, and then Cass is going to, like, just fully lean into his villain era. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that's how it goes down. I think that they're finally going to reveal everything they needed to reveal about the season.
Mm.
Because we're now hitting, what, that's 6:19?
6:20.
6:20. So there's 2 episodes left of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the shit that they've got to get out of the way so they can go bang, bang with the season finales. Whether it's a 2-part season finale or, like, 2 individual episodes.
2 individual, I'm pretty sure.
It doesn't really matter. They're all going to be dealing with the same thing. There is no avoiding it now. They have hit D-Day. They have to deal with this. And so I think that shit's going to hit the fan. And I think, honestly, at this point, I think that they're going to treat it as if Cass was, like, the big bad of the season all along. Him and Dean are going to, you know, quote-unquote break up. And then from there, they're going to deal with the implications of, oh, well, the most powerful being that we kind of relied on is no longer in our corner. and is now actively doing things that we feel the need to stop.
Interesting. Okay. I'm not going to ask any follow-up questions because I feel like you've just elaborated a fair bit. I feel like that's the biggest, that is the most elaborate next episode, I think, guess you maybe have ever had.
I feel like it's almost not even like a guess for the next episode. It's like a guess for the rest of the season.
I think it's a testament to, like I said before, like Gamble has a strong structure for her season. I think it's a testament that you could look at what she's given you up to this point and have a pretty solid feeling about how she might play out the rest of the season. Whereas, like, with Kripke, you're right. Like, he just likes introducing things at the last fucking second, and you're just like, how am I supposed to?
Like, you know? The fact that we didn't get a weapon that could just kill an archangel without having to go against an archangel this week, like, says all you need to say about their differences in running their shows, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Okay. Before we do our official wrap-up, I am going to put a little note here for all of our lovely listeners. A lot of you, in our survey that we did at the end of Kripke Era, requested a live reaction for The Man Who Would Be King. And we all know why, except Jamie, who will find out soon enough. Here is the thing about the live reactions. The way we have to set up for them to be possible means that it's distracting. So Jamie's not really getting the full impact of an episode because she's focused on the fact that I'm there. And so she's making comments to me. So she's missing things that are happening because she's chatting or she's making jokes or, you know,
I'm also just hyper fixated on the fact that I'm being recorded at that very point in time.
If you've never done like reaction to something where you are being recorded, I will tell you right now, it's not as genuine as if you were just having a reaction without being recorded, because you are very aware that you're being recorded. And it's like, we can't watch the episode on a television because of the way we have to have the mic set up. So you have to watch it on a laptop, and it's just not the best viewing experience. And it's fine for episodes like Changing Channels where, like, you know, the reveal was Gabe, obviously, but the episode itself is like just very fun and lighthearted, and it doesn't really matter if you're not paying the most attention because you maybe miss a joke, but you don't really miss anything else. With an episode like this, I want Jamie to have the full experience. I don't want her to be distracted by the fact that I'm sitting there. I don't want her to feel like she has to be making content while she's watching the episode. So I'm very sorry if you wanted a live reaction for this one. We are going to skip it.
And if you don't like that decision, it was Beth's decision, so go at her.
But in saying that, it's also, I mean, you've listened to our live reactions thus far. Jamie's not a very,
audible.
A lot of the reaction she has is visual, which doesn't translate that well to an audio format like this.
I feel like
which,
the technical term is flailing.
Yeah. Or just looking at me significantly. So over the top of my laptop.
Oh my god, they should call us Destia. We just look at each other significantly.
So for the sake of Jamie actually being able to pay attention to the episode, being able to come to the discussion with having put more thought into it.
Also, I don't know what sort of episode it is, but sometimes it's just fun for me to come to the recording slightly pissy and ready to talk. Only stewing on it for, you know,
8 to 12 hours.
8 to 12 hours can do that.
And so anyway, this is a very long rambly way of saying, I'm very sorry, but you will not be getting a live reaction for The Man Who Would Be King. That's just how it's going to be. Apologies if you're disappointed, but I think that it's going to be a better episode and a better discussion if we do it this way. So that's what we're going to do. Anywho, that brings us to the end of today's episode. Hopefully you have had just as much fun listening as we have had recording. And if you wanted to touch base with us, have a chat anywhere outside of listening to us ramble on in your ears for an hour or so every week, you can always find us on any of our socials, all the links for which are in the description below. And some possible topics for conversation could include, I would be really interested, if you were going to make a hybrid monster, which ones would you pick? Like, I'm going to say you have liberty up to three. What three monsters are you combining to make the ultimate, I suppose, killing machine is the purpose that Eve is going for. So, you know, where would you go with that creatively, I wonder? That could be an interesting thing for us to have a chat about, maybe on the Discord. So head on over there and give us your thoughts. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and hopefully we have you back next week for The Man Who Would Be King. Bye!
To be fair, I think if anyone's listened to this point, they're not skipping The Man Who Would Be King. Like, I haven't even seen it, and I'm like, I don't... Doesn't seem like the sort of episode anyone's planning on skipping.
No.